You're listening to the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Harold Mazingo. Just a brief introduction on myself. I was a 15th round draft pick by the New York Mets in the 2003 MLB draft. And I was a 6th round pick by the Kansas City Royals in the 2006 MLB draft. I spent 6 seasons pitching professionally, and now I own Mazingo Baseball. And I am very excited to welcome y'all to the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. Enjoy. All right, welcome back to the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. Today we have a very special guest. I'm excited to hear this one for sure. We got none other than Bill Miller, owner of Bill Miller Training out in Chicago, Illinois. Bill has written 2 books here, Swing Fast, A Guide to Rotational Power Development, and his latest is Throw Fast, A Guide to Developing Throw Power. So, Bill, welcome to the show, and give us a little bit more in detail about your background and how all this came to be.
Yeah, Harold, thanks so much for having me on, man. I guess as a ball player myself, I was always one of those kids that was a very big, strong guy that wasn't very fast. In high school, I could deadlift a whole lot of weight, in college and all that. But, you know, when it came to trying to play professional baseball, even at the indie ball level, everybody else was throwing faster than me, hitting balls farther than me. So that's kind of what I dedicated my career towards, is like, what am I missing? And what sort of strength and conditioning things was I missing out on from just doing weight room training only that I maybe missed out on? And that's what I wrote a lot about in those books. It's not that the weight room is a bad place, but there's a lot of other areas that you need to look into in order to really get the most out of your bat speed and the most out of your throwing velocity.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, Bill, before we really get into this stuff, tell people kind of where they can go find the links to those books you've written here.
Yeah, so there's 2 different spots. You can find them on my Instagram at Bill Miller Training, or on Twitter at Bill Mills, BILLMILLS. You can find the links to the books there. The Swing Fast book is on Amazon, so it's really easy. You can buy it in 2 clicks. The other book I put on Lulu.com. It was a little bit easier to format the book on that, not Amazon. So you do have to go into a different website and log in for that book.
Nice. All right, so Bill, you and I have talked several times about force velocity stuff. And before I really dive into that, I want to touch on something. I guess it really is diving into that, but I want to touch on something first that you mentioned a while ago. You were talking about how the weight room can sort of almost be like misleading for a lot of guys, right? So we get told a lot of times that the weight room is the separator, which obviously you and I both know can be true. But that can also be exactly what certain athletes don't need, right?
Right.
So let's start there and sort of get into, first off, what is this force velocity profiling? What does it mean? And why does it matter for baseball players?
Yeah, so the way I look at it is we have this force velocity spectrum. We have this whole spectrum of high speed, light load exercises at that velocity end. That's where we'll find a lot of our baseball type movements. And then we have that force end of the spectrum. That's where we find a lot of our weight training movements. And the problem here is you can't only train at one end of the spectrum, because you're going to miss out on adaptations that you could get from training at the other end. So don't get me wrong. Like, I do train throughout the spectrum. We'll train at both ends, but you do always have to understand that there are differences in the way we move when we move a light load very fast versus a heavy load very slow. And that's probably the biggest difference here that I like to talk about. A lot of people need to understand is when we move a heavy load, a very heavy load, we cannot move it fast. So the way our central nervous system responds then is we have slower levels of motor unit firing rate. The way that we activate those muscle fibers is going to be much slower, so that we can recruit more muscle fibers to lift that weight. But when we move a light load very quickly, or we throw a baseball or we swing a baseball bat, we're not really recruiting near the same level of muscle fibers, but we have to recruit whatever we do use very, very fast. And that's something that we can train. We can train this with sprinting, jumping, medicine ball throws, And that's the only real way to tap into that aspect of things. And that's something I think people need to understand. If you're only training heavy loads really slowly, you're never ever going to train that rate coding or that rate of force development aspect very well. And if you're missing out on that, you're just not going to throw a baseball very fast. That's the fact of the matter. You have to be able to activate whatever you're using very quickly, instantaneous. It has to happen.
No, good stuff. When we're talking about throwing a baseball or swinging a baseball bat, right? We are talking about on one side of the spectrum here. We are on an exaggerated end of the velocity side of the spectrum, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So that being said, why is it that when we are told so much that, hey, strength training is a separator, right? Why is it that strength training is a separator for a lot of guys? Why does that work so well for so many guys out there when they're in high school, per se?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think what you will mostly find, and we'll talk about force velocity profiling in a bit, but I'm sure something that both of us find quite a bit is that we see high schoolers who do profile as force deficient. They've never really trained at the force end before of that spectrum. So when they start training for that, they do increase their overall motor unit recruitment. They increase their muscle mass as well, which can improve your overall output. You know, as far as power, just the general equation of power is concerned, it's force times velocity. So there is that force component to everything that we do on the baseball field. And I think the proof is in the pudding. I mean, if you watch playoff baseball right now, most pitchers are pretty strong. You know, they're well-built athletic dudes. But at the same time, though, if you go too far down that rabbit hole, you don't really see any pitchers in the big leagues that look like they could bench press 450 pounds. You know what I mean? We don't have any power lifters out on the baseball field either. So there is that point of diminished returns. It's just at those beginner level stages at the high school level, even 12, 13 years old, you will see great results in velocity simply by getting stronger, improving that force end of the spectrum.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but as baseball athletes, we spend all of our practice time, right? And training time. When I say training, I mean our throwing or hitting related work, right? We're essentially covering our velocity needs, right? So right. The other end of that, and just to clarify for everyone who may be confused in any way, when we say force and velocity, we're talking about strength as being force. So strength training, right? Mm-hmm. And velocity is really speed. Yeah. So speed work, meaning when we throw a baseball, it's at a high rate. So that's speed work. Swinging a bat, again, a high rate of speed. So that's our speed work. So when we are getting our velocity needs covered through baseball activity, the other end of that, when you've never been exposed to any sort of training whatsoever, is the strength side. And the benefit there is the carryover to the speed side, the velocity side, correct?
100%, yeah. And that's the main idea here. All the training that you do should always improve output at that velocity end. That's the main idea. And that's where I think people sort of get confused is they say, well, my deadlift went up this month, but my baseball velocity or my med ball velocity or my jumping didn't go up this month. That's the disconnect that I think we'll talk about in a little bit.
Yeah. So look, you mentioned medicine balls. So that's a great segue here. We're talking just force and velocity right now, but there's so many levels in the middle of all that. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's where you really find quote unquote power. Right. So talk about where medicine balls fit in to this whole force velocity equation.
Yeah, they're definitely more towards the velocity end. I wouldn't say it's smack in the middle. I would say right. Medicine ball throws, probably they're more towards that velocity end, but it's definitely not as fast. Obviously, a medicine ball throw comes out at, what, 30, 35 miles an hour at best most of the time, whereas a baseball, you could throw it twice as hard, if not much harder than that. So the velocity of the movement will sort of dictate where it is on that force velocity spectrum. And I do think, too, like, it's not that the middle of that spectrum, maybe where you'll find those weighted jumps, Olympic lifts, those movements are okay. I don't really do a ton of them, though. To be honest, I would rather focus on one end or the other with those medicine balls kind of being the middle factor there, if that makes sense.
Right. We're going to talk just specifically here to any parents of high school kids or any high school kids that may be listening. Is there sort of a, what am I trying to ask here? Is there sort of a transition, if you will, or I don't know what the right question is, but an outline for, hey, if I have a 3-month off season, I'm going to start on this side of the spectrum and then gradually work my way towards the other side of the spectrum here?
You definitely could. And that's a popular method. I personally don't use it though. There are a lot of people who will phase their off season, whether you got the strength phase and the muscle building phase early. And then later in the off season, you do a lot more of the power and then the speed work later on. I don't do that. I kind of include it all at the same time. And then we continuously test the velocity ends of the spectrum, the sprinting, the jumping, the med ball throws, and obviously your baseball velos. We test those probably every couple weeks at least. And now we know that every bit of training that we do is impacting that. That's always the end goal, is impact the velocity end of the spectrum. To me, that's much more simple, but and you can continuously tinker with it. So if, let's say, we did a phase, maybe a 3-week phase of just strength where we didn't touch a medicine ball, and we realized that the velocity end of the spectrum went up, then we know that we can just keep doing that until the velocity end doesn't improve anymore. That makes sense.
Yeah, no, perfect. Look, and I'm with you. We do the same here. We just throw it all in all year long. Mm-hmm. So now we talked a little bit about the high school guys. So at what age do you start concerning yourself with this force velocity profile? And sort of what age do you start guys on quote unquote strength training or velocity training, power training, whatever the case may be?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think we can go down a few different rabbit holes here of like exercise selection, because I think that matters too. I would probably never tell a kid, even if he was 9 or 10 or 11, like I would never tell him to only do slow strength training stuff. Like, you're a kid. I want you to move fast. I want you to be an athlete. But maybe the way we do it, instead of tracking medicine ball throw velocity with a 9 or a 10-year-old, maybe we'll just do something like, hey, let's take this ball and chest pass it for distance. Super safe, easy movement. The kid has some fun with it. But now as you maybe get a little bit older, you could do some of those same exercises, but maybe start adding in at age 13 or 14. Maybe we'll add in and see if he does a downhill medicine ball overhead throw. He should be able to handle it. Let's test what the velocity is. And then maybe instead of testing it all the time, maybe we'll test it again at the end of the month just to see if his output improved as a result of all of his training. But to be honest, at that age, we are doing a lot of, like, we're doing push-ups, we're doing some inverted rows, maybe some band exercises. Like, it's not going to get super advanced at the strength training age, but I do want to sort of teach those movement patterns so that maybe when we start loading them up in maybe the eighth grade or freshman level year, where we start doing some more weight training stuff, we're prepared for doing all those things safely, if that makes sense.
No, perfect. And look, you and I talked a little bit before we started here, and we're both pretty big on this. But just to throw you a little bit of a cookie here, right? If guys, or not just guys, but anyone playing baseball or softball for that matter too, right? If they profile as velocity deficient, or they are just severely behind amongst their peers when it comes to the velocity side of the spectrum, what is the likelihood that they're ever going to throw a ball hard or be able to hit a ball at elite levels?
It's not very good.
Yeah, there you go.
That's the reality of it. Like, this is the sport we play. The sport we play is not shot put throwing. It's not football. It's baseball. It is the highest velocity output that you can create with your body. And so if you're not good at that action, that the ability to tap into motor units very fast, if you're not good at that, you will not be very good at throwing a baseball fast or hitting a ball far. It is kind of like what I said at the beginning of the podcast there when I introduced myself. I was a very velocity deficient athlete. Now, back then, I had no idea what that meant, and I never measured anything in my training. I just lifted and lifted for 5, 6, 7 years straight, West Side barbell till I die and stuff like that.
Right.
But that's how I approached training for such a long time that it wound up being very detrimental to the velocity end of my spectrum. And you think about why that is. I mean, you know, it could have had something to do with I developed so many muscle fibers that weren't very, very fast twitch. You know, those, I don't know if you've ever seen anything on those type 2X muscle fibers, but we don't have to go down that rabbit hole. But that's something like, there's something there, I think, and maybe even more so just the ability to tap into those muscle fibers very fast. I think that's where it's at when it comes to baseball. But it's something I just never trained, and I probably lost it. That's why I could never really throw baseball past 90 miles per hour, even though I was deadlifting close to 600 pounds. It's like that's kind of the idea here that I always try to tell people is like, look at where you are. Look at where you are elite. If you are not elite at the velocity end of the spectrum, there is something wrong there. You will not be able to transfer that training well to the baseball field if that's the case.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, that's obviously great. And you and I agree 100% on this one. But the million-dollar question becomes, what do you do with an athlete that is velocity deficient? If it's a high school athlete that just cannot produce on the velocity end of the spectrum, what do you do besides tell him, like, hey, look, I'm sorry, you're going to have to find a new position or something?
No, I mean, I guess, like I had said, most of those high school kids, we train them, like, with very basic strength training. That's usually the goal. We want to move heavier and heavier weight. And maybe that would help that velocity deficient kid because maybe they're just so weak in all realms that they'll just improve their output by getting stronger. That's not a bad idea. But I would honestly say, like, I would still make a majority of their training something athletic, something high speed. Because guess what? If you're that bad at the velocity end, we could take 3-4 years to get you stronger before we start pushing the velocity end of the spectrum. And guess what? By that time, you're looking at D3 colleges at best for your scholarships. Like, the clock starts ticking for these kids earlier and earlier now. And I don't like thinking about it like that. But the reality is, like, if a kid wants to play on varsity, you got to be kind of explosive. If you want to get a college scholarship, you got to be very explosive. So I would definitely say, hey, we are going to jumpstart your program, and we're going to start moving fast. We're going to start sprinting. We're going to start jumping. We're going to start doing med ball throws. And now you say the problem with that could be that you run into injury concerns. So you do have to train maybe some of the injury concern areas like the shoulder, the elbow, the knees, and the hips. Maybe you do have to do some isometrics, some slow eccentrics around those areas for training that they don't get hurt when we're doing all these high-speed movements. I get that, but I would still make a majority of their training high-speed stuff because if we do try doing a ton of heavy strength training, they're going to get so fatigued that light load, high-speed movement won't even be that beneficial in the first place.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. I love it. What we try to talk about here, or at least this is what we're trying to train some of the athletes. I don't talk too much about this terminology, but it's just something that I want to talk to you about and just sort of pick your brain about for a minute. The three things that we are trying to really train here would be stiffness, elasticity, and rate of force development, right? All the while getting our velocity components in from our throwing or hitting or whatever the case may be, right? Strength training, but those other three things are really the major focus of our training. And I want to get your thoughts on kind of those three things I just mentioned. And you can sort of touch on what they mean on a deeper level and how you go about sort of giving some ideas on how you go about training those sorts of things.
Yeah, man, I love that mindset. Actually, it's a real simple way to do it. I kind of think about it similarly. Actually, I think about accelerators and decelerators. That's the way I like to think about it. And so when you think about those accelerators, what's accelerating the movement? We want those to have great rate of force development, and we want those to have great elasticity. So like the pecs, for instance, this is maybe something for the more advanced guys, but the pecs, you want those to be able to stretch and rapidly go back in the opposite direction. Whereas maybe you want those rear shoulder muscles to be a little bit more stiff. That's the way I look at it, at least. You want the muscle group surrounding the knee. You want those to be a little more stiff. The ankle to have good stiffness so that when you hit the ground, you're not mush and you're not, you know, really screwing up the kinetic chain from that angle. So I love that mindset. I think it's a really simple way to make your training make sense for guys. So now when they say, hey, coach, why am I doing this very high speed movement for my pecs, but I'm not doing a bunch of high speed movement for maybe my rear shoulder? You know what I mean? Now you can begin to tell them exactly why we're doing certain things, and it makes sense in the athlete's head now as well.
Right. So look, you and I both know this well. Anyone who deals with baseball players knows this well. Baseball is so quote unquote mechanics driven. Everyone thinks, oh, my mechanics, if I can just figure this out, it'll be the magic unlock and I'll throw 10 miles an hour harder, right? Everybody wants mechanics work, right? And it's just like, look, if you can't produce force in a rapid window, I mean, in a rapid force in a small window, right? Or if you have some instability where there can't be any stiffness there, it doesn't matter what the mechanics of it are, right? It's right. Just going to be difficult. And if you could, I don't want to put you on the spot so much like this, but can you touch, I'm not the best at trying to relay this message, is why I don't talk about it too much. We just train for it. But can you talk about exactly what stiffness is? Because most guys, when they hear it, they think, oh, my arm is stiff, or this is too tight. I think along those lines. So can you expand on that a little bit and talk about
Man, that's a great point, because that is it's a phrase that gets thrown around a lot that I do think athletes and even coaches might not understand. They might not understand what it means. When we say stiffness, we don't mean it like, oh, my arm is sore or I feel stiff waking up in the morning. It's when you are producing force at fast speeds, you can ultimately handle that force because you can decelerate it effectively. So when we are whipping that arm in it, well, that stiffness component with those muscle groups is basically resisting excessive lengthening. So we're resisting keeping the joints in place, keeping everything from going out of whack as we decelerate, and ultimately allow for a more efficient deceleration process. So a real simple way to think about stiffness is if we're doing jumps, you and I are just jumping off of a box and landing on the ground and seeing who could jump the highest, the depth jump. If you have great stiffness, Harold, you are going to hit the ground and jump way higher than me if I have poor stiffness. So that's the stiffness we're talking about. Kind of like if you had a basketball, for instance, and you had a basketball full of air, really stiff when you touch that basketball. You drop it to the ground, it hits the ground, it bounces right back up. But you take out some of that air, it loses some of that stiffness, and now that basketball doesn't bounce back so easily. So that's the idea here, is we're talking about the ability to accept force and then develop it in the opposite direction, or maybe accept force and decelerate effectively with that movement. So it's a bit of an advanced concept, but it's not something that we're talking about that's detrimental for athletes or detrimental for output. It's going to help keep you safe, and it's going to help you move better as well.
I don't think I've ever heard that explained better. That was great. So I think most of the time young kids are training stiffness, or at least they were. We face a little bit of different challenges in today's society, right? Like kids aren't exposed to as much play or PE as we once were, right? So in my opinion, and something that I try to be cognizant of at all times, is that these kids aren't getting the same sort of levels of play and physical fitness as they once did. So I have to sort of compensate for that in here, right, when I'm training them. So when kids are just jumping around, right, or sprinting or you know, playing tag, all that stuff, right, they are working on stiffness to a degree. They're just doing less of it today than ever because they're trying to be forced into the skill side of these sports at such a young age, and that can be very detrimental long term, which we all know, but we still do it anyways, right?
Right.
So the stiffness thing, just sort of to go into this a little bit further before we change subjects here a little bit. The only thing that I really tell the athletes is the stiffness part is really to stop us to be able to rebound into elasticity quicker. Like that's really all it is. For us to start using our elasticity quicker. That's really it. So that whole what you just said with the basketball dropping was perfect. If it has more air, it's going to be able to rebound quicker. That's exactly what we want. because it's not just gonna, you know, if it's not inflated all the way, it's gonna sink down into it a little bit more, right? Mm-hmm. It's gonna have to compress a little bit more, and it can't bounce up as high. That is the best example of a lack of stiffness and a lack of elasticity right there.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Better. So we want to keep our basketball fully inflated so they can hit the ground, not sink into the ground, and then rebound back up very quickly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
So that's going to lead us into this next topic. And you talked about it a little bit while ago because you mentioned the pecs firing quickly, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to let you handle this. We have accelerators and decelerators. You've talked about it a little bit. The pecs being maybe the main accelerator to in a baseball at a high rate, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we do things, and I know you're doing the same thing. We are throwing medicine ball, like a chest pass type deal, for distance or velocity or whatever the case may be. I'm just going to throw it up to you. Why is that important? What are you looking for out of that? And just go with it.
Yeah, and so this is perfect transition here, because now we start talking about the force velocity profile again. You can do a medicine ball chest pass force velocity profile really easily. So all you have to do is take three different loads. You can take a heavy load like a 12 pound, a really light load like a 4 pound, and then find that middle load, that eight pound. That'll be your sort of reference point. So if they throw the 12 pound ball, let's say they only throw it 15 feet, not very far relative to everybody else, but they're able to throw that 4 pound ball 35 feet and they're able to throw that middle ball maybe 20, 22 feet, you're looking at a huge jump in performance at the velocity end of the spectrum. And in all honesty, that's what you want. You want that improvement at the velocity end of the spectrum. But that would probably indicate that the kid maybe needs to work more on force production then. So that force deficient profile where they're not very good at the force end, but they're very good at the velocity end, that could be a very good, simple way to gauge a force velocity profile. Like on the opposite end of that, a velocity deficient profile might look something like what I do, where I take that 12-pound ball and I throw it 25 feet, and then I'll take the 8-pound ball and I'll throw it 32 feet, but I'll only throw that 4-pound ball maybe an extra 4 feet, 6 feet past that. I only get 35 or 36 feet. So now you're looking at somebody who should be throwing that 4-pound ball way farther than they do, but they can't because they can't produce that force very quickly. That's going to be somebody who struggles with throwing a baseball very fast. At least that's, for the most part, what I've found. And now using that force velocity profile, you can tell a kid if they need to do a little bit more strength training, if they need to train with the med balls a little bit more. But the ultimate goal should always be to get that light load medicine ball to absolutely fly. You should fly that ball farther and farther every month. You should throw it harder and harder every month with whatever movements you're doing, whether it's a shot put throw or anything else. That's really where that money is at, because you're really going to make sure that you can produce force very quickly and you can use those muscle groups when it is time to throw a baseball. You can tap into them the way they need to be used.
No, perfect. So look, we do several power tests here. And that two-knee chest pass for distance is the highest correlation with ball velocity.
Isn't
that we
that
do
crazy?
Here. Look, and I have yet to see an athlete that throws really hard struggle on the light side of that. Now, I'm not saying that just because you throw on the light side very well that you're going to throw hard. That's not what that means. But I've yet to see an athlete that throws hard struggle on the light side of that spectrum.
Right.
Now, yeah, I want to ask you a little bit tougher question here, because you just mentioned the shot put type throw, right? Mm-hmm. And now we're getting into some rotational component. We're still getting a lot of that that pec power there, right? Mm-hmm. But we're getting a rotational component. So we've seen this on several occasions, and it makes life very difficult, I'll be honest. But we've seen guys that do a great job on – Let me rephrase this. We've seen guys that do a good job on the velocity side on one and struggle on the velocity side of the other. Mm-hmm. And usually what we see is guys do well on the chest pass, on the two-knee chest pass, on the velocity side, and they struggle on the velocity side of the rotational toss. So what does that mean to you, and why is that significant?
Man, I think it's all about checking boxes. So if you've checked that box that you have explosive pecs, that you do have that pressing power in that med ball chest pass, we know that that's there, but for some reason it's not showing up in that rotational shot put throw. I mean, you've probably become one of the main experts out there on social media on back leg activity, back foot activity when you're pitching, and just general, like the kinetic sequence in general. You really know your stuff. And it's kind of the same idea here. Like, you could have a powerful athlete, but if they cannot utilize the back leg properly, utilize the whole kinetic sequence properly, they're not going to translate that very well to movement. And so that's kind of the idea here, that I would think they need that coordination component. They need to actually train with rotation now to actually get the most out of their training. Because I would bet if they're struggling with that shot put throw, then they might struggle up on the mound as well with a baseball in their hand, because they can't really utilize that motion of rotation very well either. So that's what I would say. I think it's a great movement to break it down too. You can maybe have the kid move into the throw, see if he shuffle throws a little bit better, see if he's a little more fluid with that. If that's the case, then maybe they do they need to get more athletic. They need to feel like they are being more fluid down the mound. If they struggle from that dead start, that stopped constraint position, then now you've found the weakness. You know what the weak component is. So that's the way I would look at it. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to have. It's just now you know where you need to work, and that's where I would target most of my efforts in training.
Yep. Good stuff. So I'm going to tell you this, something that we've seen. I'm not ready to say that this is a definitive thing by any means yet, because I think it would be, it sort of was common sense to me initially when I saw that, was, hey, there's a breakdown somewhere in the way that he's using his body, right? Which is, I would agree with that. I think most people would. But is there a reason why there's a breakdown, right? And so one of the things that we're seeing, again, I'm not ready to say anything definitive yet, but one of the things that we're doing now and we're seeing with guys that are in this sort of category here that we're talking about, is we are testing adduction strength. We're using the Arm Care app. There's a little device in there that measures force, how much force you can put into the thing, right? Or how much strength you have, right? What I've done on the shoulder stuff with that is documented, but we're now doing it with adduction strength, and we're doing some glute stuff with it. And what we're finding is there is a significant asymmetry there on one of those tests on the lower half of the body. And it's just not allowing them really to decel very well. That's pretty much exactly what we're seeing.
Yep.
I'm not ready to say anything definitively, but I don't see if the lead adductor is extremely weak, I don't see how you're going to decel very well, or that glute is very weak. I just don't see how it's going to be possible.
Yep. And man, that is a great, great point. I just started thinking about adductor strength like 2 weeks ago. I think I might've seen a post from either yourself or somebody else, but there's a guy named Javelin Anatomy that I've started following a lot more because I start training more javelin throwers.
Nice.
And yeah. He was talking about the adductor strength as well, and how it is such a crucial component. And it's one that I honestly never thought about before. You know, you don't think much about it. It's your groin, you know, who cares about it? Just make sure it doesn't get hurt. But the reality is, in terms of staying grounded, just that ability to stay grounded and then create rotation, instead of having to jump off of the mound, you can really stay grounded as you're going through that rotational movement. That matters a ton. And of course, driving the pelvis and everything else towards the target, that's all going to come from those smaller muscle groups that might get neglected in the heavy strength training movement that we usually do, which is deadlifting and lunging and stuff like that.
Right. No, absolutely. So just to transition out of that, because we know that weighted baseballs have been big in the baseball training world for a while now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start with this question. Do you normally create a similar type of force velocity profile with the weight of baseballs as well?
I used to, but the more I started to find that it wasn't translating very well, the more I kind of just said, I'm not really going to screw with it anymore. I definitely think you can. And with
Hold up. Now, when you said it wasn't translating very well, I'm going to need you to expand on that a little bit.
Right, yeah.
What do you mean by that?
So what was happening was we were getting guys who were very plain as day, force deficient, very skinny, weak kids who could throw a baseball fast. They were throwing 85, 90 miles per hour, but they were very skinny and weak, and they just like – they were explosive. They were explosive in every movement that they did. But then when it came to throwing those light load 3-ounce and 4-ounce baseballs, the performance wasn't jumping the way that the rest of their force velocity profiles in the weight room or anywhere else, the way that those were profiling, it was almost the exact opposite. They were throwing the light load balls just as fast as a 5-ounce ball. It wasn't improving at all. So I'm like, what the heck is going on here? And honestly, there's a lot of different reasons why that this can happen. From my perspective, it might have just been that they maxed out the velocity end. So if you lighten the load down anymore, they just can't go any faster. Maybe they can't decelerate with that speed any more effectively. So maybe they lack some deceleration strength. Those were kind of my thoughts that went through my head. But that's kind of why I gravitated away from it. And then what we'll do is we will say, okay, let's test a 6-ounce. Let's test a 4-ounce. Let's test what we're at maybe with the college guys. But for the most part, it's very individual. It's coming down to what they like. Do they like to throw the 7 and 6 ounce ball more? If it's working, if it's making the 5-ounce ball go up, then we're just going to keep it the same. And I will be 100% honest. I think every college pitcher I train has a different throwing plan. Now that I think about it, they all approach the weighted balls differently. And that, I think that's okay. Baseball is a unique. Everybody has their own unique way of making the 5-ounce ball move. Everybody's going to find ways to spin it different. Everybody's going to find ways to make that velocity happen when it needs to happen. So why not let them take ownership of their program? And at the end of the day, all I care about is the 5-ounce. That's the only one that matters to me. So the 5-ounce ball better be going up. And if it's not, then we will tinker with the program. But for the most part, the guys kind of figure it out themselves.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think you just, like, summed it up perfectly. Everything that we're trying to do is all about trying to create a way for that 5-ounce ball to increase. That's what everything that we do really boils down to. Is it right. Making the 5-ounce ball – is it helping you perform better with a 5-ounce ball? And that's really what all of this stuff is about, right? Exactly. And it's just about diving in as much as possible and breaking down things to figure out – especially as you advance, right? Mm-hmm. Because the needs get more specific. Just where are you lacking? Where can we get that extra little bit here or extra little bit there, right? That's kind of what it all boils down to. But, oh, man, look, so this has been awesome, Bill. I want to get you back on because we got a lot more to dive into. But we're going to wrap up for today. Just thanks for coming on. Any last words you want to mention out there to young kids?
Hey, yeah, for young kids, make your training fun and make sure that your training is transferring. Those are the two biggest things, man. Remember, we're always trying to make you a better baseball player. So at the end of the day, we're not just trying to work out for working out's sake. We're trying to make you better on the ball field. That's what always matters.
Yep. Well, perfect. All right, Bill. I appreciate it. This was awesome. We'll do it one day.
Awesome. Thanks so much, man.
No problem. Thanks for watching the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. Need y'all to do me a favor, go follow me on my social media accounts. It's going to be Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and all of them are going to be at Mazingo Baseball. That's at Mazingo Baseball, okay? Go out and check out the website, mazingobaseball.com, and do me a huge favor and check out the e-guide I wrote called Young Guns. You won't be disappointed. It's all about developing youth baseball pitchers, and we cover almost everything in there. It comes with supplemental video content. I think right now we're at about 50 videos strong. And still adding on to that, okay? You don't want to miss out on that. All right, so go check those things out.